Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Patzer, your host on The Raw Deal today, which is the 8th of November, 2023. I have a wonderful guest today, Lila from Palestine, who will be giving us an insider or true life experience perspective on what's happening between Hamas and Israel. You are going to be blown away. Meanwhile, Zelensky, the great Democrat leader we're supporting, has canceled Ukrainian elections to consolidate his dictatorial rule. The South Front reports what's going on, where U.S. media, no doubt CIA, has made the South Front all but inaccessible. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announced November 6th the cancellation of the Ukrainian election. His cancellation of the election comes as more and more Western commentators highlight Zelensky's dictatorial tendencies, which are again on display after canceling the elections under the guise of needing to concentrate on the war with Russia, a conflict Ukraine has no chance of winning, which again, Western experts are also pointing out. I think it was quite brilliant of our new speaker, by the way, to combine, you know, funding for Ukraine with funding for our border, because, of course, the Democrats are all into open borders. Meanwhile, we have any number of reports about the ongoing slaughter of Palestinians. Israel continues to attack hospitals in Gaza, killing at least 81. That's come from Al Jazeera. Here's another also from Al Jazeera. Israeli-Hamas war live. UN chief says Israeli operations clearly wrong. Here's a summation. The number of civilians killed in Gaza indicates there's something clearly wrong with Israel's military operation, the UN chief says. Israel continues targeting residential areas across Gaza, 214 killed in the last 24 hours. At least 10,569 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks on Gaza since October 7th. In Israel, the death toll over the same period stands at more than 1,400. Top diplomats from the G7 issued a joint statement condemning Hamas, supporting Israel's right to self-defense, and calling for humanitarian pauses in Gaza. Yes, of course. Except that Israel, as the occupying power, does not have a right to self-defense. They have an obligation to be protective of those under their power, as a Russian ambassador to the United Nations has observed. Meanwhile, the Electronic Intifada reports water is running out in Gaza. Remember the blockade imposed by Israel. No water, no food, no electricity, all inhumane, all forms of collective punishment, clearly in violation of international law, the Geneva Conventions, and more. But remember the rule of three. A person can go 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. I do believe a part of the whole operation has been to starve and to dehydrate the people of Gaza. Israel's genocidal war in Gaza has resulted in a severe shortage of essentials. On 9 October, Israel Defense Minister Gallant announced a comprehensive blockade. The supply of electricity, food, fuel, and water were all cut off. Abu Ahmad faces extreme difficulties in providing water for his family. This is talking about one. But it's far more vast than that. There's no question about it. This is a savage, sadistic, inhumane assault, and the world is not taking it well. Nevertheless, of course, Israel continues to rebuff U.S. calls for a humanitarian pause. Now, to the extent to which Israel has been open to that, they would like to get the hostages out, because then they can go about destroying all the tunnels systematically and not have the blowback of taking out the hostages. But frankly, I mean, that's not the highest priority. And God knows their public relations situation is catastrophic. Now, here are some thoughts from Douglas McGregor, particularly about Turkey. There's a bit of an intro here by the host that I'm going to finesse, but we have, here we go with
in Ankara today. So it is the cold treatment from Turks toward the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. Just after midnight, he has landed in Ankara, and there was not any high-level Turkish diplomat receiving him at the airport. And today, we have been informed that there's not going to be a joint presser after the meeting. And there is not going to be a meeting between President Erdogan and Antony Blinken as well. So all of these are telling us something.
Telling us something. I think one of the first things it's telling us is that the United States has a real problem with its diplomatic power, because this is kind of a repeat of what happened with Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago, when Blinken went there and he was made to wait for like many hours because bin Salman was busy, didn't want to bother with him. And the disregard that he showed for Blinken, therefore the United States, is on display a lot here. We're starting to see that more often, that our senior officials are viewed with almost contempt by even some of our allies.
As you know, Turkey's been on a path that diverges pretty sharply from the West for at least the last 20 years, maybe longer. Mr. Erdogan has simply made something clear to everyone that may not have understood it in the past, and that is that Turkey is an Islamic state. And he has restored Islam's central position in Turkish society. That brand of Islam is Sunni Islam with a Turkish flavor. And remember that Mr. Erdogan is the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, not only in the region, but also in the United States and Canada. So he's very, very prominent, particularly in Hamas circles, because Hamas is ultimately, you might say, an armed wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. So everyone turns constantly towards Iran, pointing the finger, blaming them for whatever is wrong with Hamas. But in truth, the Turks are probably closer to Hamas in their thinking and attitudes, certainly towards Israel and the world, than they are to Iran. And I think that's an important point that everybody misses.
Yeah.
The Turkish foreign minister was the one who met with him, but Mr. Blinken was not met at the airport by anyone of significance. It was almost treated as a your routine visit when in fact it's obviously not. When he did finally get to the capital, he met only with the foreign minister, whereas the Iranian foreign minister, when he visited, was received by all of the leading officials. And then after he met with the Turkish foreign minister, was able to go and meet with Mr. Erdogan. So I think the contrast is profound. I hope everybody noticed that.
And you know, I bet no one in the United States noticed this unless they're watching Deep Dive here, which is why we're so grateful to have you on here. But do you suspect, I'm probably a rhetorical question, but the people in the region are noticing those two contradictions?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. And Mr. Blinken has spent most of his time talking to Arab states that, let's be frank, they have power in their own right in various areas, but they're no match militarily for Israel and the United States. Egypt, for instance, which has tried very hard to maintain good relations with Israel over the last, 50 years, frankly, has no desire to go to war with Israel, but it's in a tough position given the treatment being meted out to the Arabs in Gaza. The same thing is true in Jordan, I think, also Saudi Arabia, the Emirates. But that doesn't mean that they are forgiving towards us or the Israelis for what is happening. It's just that there's probably not a great deal that they alone can do about it. And I think that's an important point. There is someone who can have a profound impact militarily, and that is Mr. Erdogan. And everybody knows that you're talking about the largest army in NATO, probably the largest air force after our own, and conceivably one of the largest navies in the world. And that's not all. I mean, Mr. Erdogan currently maintains what is reportedly the largest drone fleet in the world, that is air unmanned aerial vehicles. And they have made a lot of progress. They build a lot of their own equipment. It's very good equipment. They have a huge manpower pool, over 2 million reservists that can be rapidly mobilized if necessary. And anyone who bothers to look at the televised demonstrations can conclude very rapidly that this public is very firmly behind Mr. Erdogan on this question.
And in fact, that's a point I wanted to make out here. We have a small piece of a clip here, which brings out a couple of important points, and then we're going to follow that up with something Erdogan specifically said. And I want you to help us interpret that. First of all, Gary, show that first clip there.
At a mass rally in Istanbul Saturday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan stepped up his support of Hamas, declaring again that Hamas is not a terrorist organization, but a liberation movement. The Turkish leader went on to warn that Turkey may come in the night to Gaza, with the crowd chanting to send the Turkish military. In response to Erdogan's statements, Israel has recalled its diplomats from Turkey, setting back the country's newly restored diplomatic relations.
So this isn't something that's happening in the dark. I mean, there was over a million people standing there, at that rally, and Erdogan is absolutely out in the front, not afraid of what anybody has to think about it. And I think one of the more concerning issues, but especially in light of what you just said about their military power, he said this.
Ya İsrail, sen buralara nasıl geldin? Nasıl girdin? Sen bir işgalcisin. Sen bir örgütsün. Dolayısıyla Türk milleti bunu biliyor. İsrail, biz de seni savaş suçlusu olarak dünyaya ilan edeceğiz. Gazze'de savunma değil, açık ve alçak bir katliam yürütülmektedir.
So the question is, how much of that is playing to the crowd for the domestic folks? How much of it is an international message? And what is actually the message he's trying to send? And bottom line is, what is the risk that they could actually make good on that with that military against Israel?
Well, one of the things that he's also said that is hardly being covered in the West is that Turkish soldiers will eventually fight in Gaza. So I don't think you can be much more straightforward than that. But Mr. Erdogan is nothing if not clever, and he's very sensitive to timing. And what you saw in that rally and what you've seen in subsequent presentations and speeches is an effort to mobilize the country. He would not make this effort if he thought this war would be over quickly, that Israel would simply cease and desist and embrace a ceasefire. He's actually preparing the nation for action. Now, when will that action occur? Well, he's certainly not going to tell anybody. But I'm quite certain that it, particularly in view of the recent celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Republic, where he paraded 100 naval combatants through the Bosphorus in front of the world and has made it very clear over and over and over again that he has great confidence in the military power at his disposal. It's going to happen. The question is timing. And I would argue the same thing is probably true for Iran, although I think Iran is far more reluctant to become involved because Iran fears us and what it can do to its infrastructure, which is ultimately more fragile than Turkey's.
Right.
But still, he's quite serious, and it would be a mistake to dismiss him. I listened to someone quite recently in Washington who told me, oh, he's a blowhard. He said these things before. Nothing's going to happen. Well, good luck with that approach. I think it would be prudent to take him very, very seriously and understand that he's one man in the region, one leader with the capability to destroy Israel.
Yeah, I think that's the key. He has the capacity. Whereas Iran doesn't have the capacity. They can hurt Israel. They can't destroy it. But Turkey have a real chance for that.
You know, one other quick point. People forget that from the Turkish standpoint, when he talks about the occupiers, remember who was in Palestine for hundreds of years? The Turks, the Ottoman Turks. Who controlled Syria? Who controlled the Levant? Who controlled most of the Arab world in the Middle East? It was the Turkish Empire. So from his vantage point, you could argue that the Israeli Jews are standing on soil that he privately regards as not only Ottoman, but also permanently Islamic. And remember, they have this doctrine that says, once you're Islamic, it can never change. So you put all of these things together, and it would be a mistake not to take him seriously.
Yeah.
I think the U.S. would love to not take him seriously, but that McGregor has it exactly right. Meanwhile, Russia observes that the remark made by a minister of Israel about nuking Gaza raises a huge number of questions. Here from antiwar.com. Russia's foreign minister said Tuesday, an Israeli minister's comments about nuking Gaza raise questions about Israel's unofficial nuclear arsenal. Israeli heritage minister Amartya Ali made the comment on Sunday, saying there are no innocents in Gaza and that dropping nuclear weapons on the enclave is an option. Israel is estimated to have somewhere between 90 and 300 nuclear warheads, but does not acknowledge its arsenal. The comments appear to confirm Israel does have nuclear weapons, going against the Israeli government policy of ambiguity on the issue. Scott Ritter, by the way, in a previous comment, observed that he was fired by Netanyahu, but not for suggesting wiping out Gaza, but for implying the existence of nukes in the Israeli arsenal, which is a state secret. And by the way, under the Fulbright Amendment, that has not been observed by this government of the United States. No country is allowed to receive U.S. foreign aid if it has an undeclared nuclear weapons. But we just conveniently overlook that fact in the case of Israel. It raised a huge number of questions, Russia's foreign ministry spokesman Maria Zakharova said about his comments. The number one question is, did we hear an official declaration that Israel has nuclear weapons? Consequently, the next question everyone has is, where are the international organizations? Where's the IAEA? Where are the inspectors? Yes, where Israel has conducted nuclear tests. If this program exists and existed, where were the tests conducted? At what testing grounds? Obviously, apparently not in the region, then where? And isn't the United States behind all of this? Indeed, it now makes me wonder whether some United States nuclear tests were not actually tests of Israeli weapons instead of U.S. Meanwhile, Netanyahu declares he's envisioning an indefinite Israeli occupation. In other words, it's not enough to have the world's largest open-air concentration camp. It's not enough to have it all fenced in. It's not enough to destroy. Now they want to have an indefinite occupation. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu envisions Israel taking overall security responsibility for the Gaza Strip indefinitely if the Israeli war to destroy Hamas is successful. He said in an interview with ABC News that aired late Monday, I think Israel will, for an indefinite period, of course that means forever, have overall security responsibility, because we've seen what happens when we don't. When we don't have that security responsibility, what we have is the eruption of Hamas terror on a scale we couldn't imagine, he said. Now, I'm utterly convinced this was allowed to happen. It was the IDF forces were removed, some were disarmed, they allowed the fence to be breached. We have two former IDF saying this is ridiculous, that should be allowed to happen. One said if a bird shit on the fence, it would bring out a massive response in force. Another said a squirrel near the fence would bring out a massive response in force. That was the most secure border in the world. And I agree with that, and there's no possible way it could have been breached other than to be allowed to happen. And others have observed that, these are Russian analysts, that in a day, Hamas took more territory than the Ukrainian army had in 4 months of his ill-fated counterattack, which is also correct, but I believe it was all a PR stunt to set things up to give a justification for the massive onslaught, which, however, is grossly disproportionate and is being denounced by virtually every nation in the world. I will say every moral nation in the world. Here's a report, too. Many nations cutting links to Israel over its response to the terrorist attack. List of leftist countries ignore atrocities committed against innocent civilians. In a series of statements that literally ignore the Hamas terrorism that killed 1,400, including babies who were beheaded, we know that's nonsense. That was just a story. Whole family burned alive, another story. Nine leftist nations so far have announced they're cutting links to the Middle East democracy. It's an apartheid state. I mean, how stupid is this? Remember, Israel had the opportunity a decade or more ago to be either a democratic state, with all citizens, you know, of different races and religions allowed equal opportunity to participate in the government, or an apartheid state, and they chose to be an apartheid state. A report in The Hill said nation withdrawing ambassadors or otherwise cutting ties include South Africa, Turkey, Jordan, Colombia, Chad, Chile, Honduras, Bahrain, and Bolivia. Many others are going to follow, have no doubt whatsoever. Barcelona, too, the dockers. This is very interesting. Barcelona dockers refuse to handle military equipment amid the Gaza war. In other words, they're interfering with transitions of war to Israel. The Barcelona Port Stevedores Union has referred to load and unload any military material aboard the war in Gaza, and urged protection of civilian populations in areas of conflict, following a move by Belgian transport units last week. And there's more. This is interesting. France votes to tighten migration control as Europe is overrun with illegals. Welcome to the party. Western Europe, like the U.S., is getting absolutely swamped by illegal mass migration. There's no two ways about it. From Middle East, Giorgia Meloni in the Mediterranean South, up to Rishi Sunak by the British Channel, passing by Germany's Olaf Scholz. Political leaders are under immense pressure from their constituency to tackle in a firm and decisive manner the rampant illegal flood that's hurting their economies and destroying their cultures. This, of course, is a long-term plan that the Jews envisioned back in the 1930s to flood Europe with migrants from Africa to disrupt their culture and to create mongrel civilization, which is being implemented equally here in the United States now, with a massive flood across our southern borders where the Biden administration is all in and giving them, you know, debit cards, $2,200 a month. They're giving them food. They're giving them shelter. It's absurd. Meanwhile, this is a very interesting couple of reports. we have U.S. troops injured in attack on U.S. bases in the Middle East, and therefore the military, the U.S. is starting to ramp up. They've just hired a whole lot of new recruiters. We get this. People notice a curious and sudden lack of diversity in new Army recruiting ad. It's well known at this point the U.S. military is having recruiting issues like every other institution in America. The military has embraced wokeism and been prioritizing progressive concepts like diversity, equity, and inclusion. So when this new recruiting ad dropped recently, people immediately noticed that this one is slightly different in terms of who is represented. It's all white guys. It's all the kind of people who have made up the bulk of the military in the past, especially Southerners. But they've been turned off by the woke military. They're not signing up, and they're not going to sign up now. Information Liberation reports, we are not dying for Israel. Americans reject new Army ad targeting white men for recruitment. The U.S. Army dropped their commitment to diversity, inclusion, and equity with a new ad targeting white men for recruitment, but their efforts do not appear to be working. U.S. Army tweets, together we can take on any challenge. Jump into the unlimited army of possibilities. Here's an unedited snapshot of the comments. Together we can take on any comments. Not this generation, Moshe. You're not getting my sons like you got my father and I before. Have fun at the diversity squad. There are no women in this advertisement. No time for diversity now. It's wartime, huh, guys? Yeah, we're not dying for Israel. Protect the southern border. I really want a realist, but I don't see any Latinx females in wheelchairs. Not sure where I would fit in. Paragliders. You recruited and promoted obese drones. They can fight your war for Israel. This is for you, U.S. Army. We'll be right back with my special guest from Palestine. Stand by.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, my guest today is a Christian Palestinian woman who knows up close and personal how the Israelis conduct themselves. She has insights about the ongoing war against Hamas that exceed those of any other source to my knowledge. Lila from Palestine, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Yes. Hello, Jim. How are you today?
Excellent. I'm so pleased to have you here.
I hope that together we can enlighten your listeners even further. I think those who have been paying attention and have the cognition of how corrupt Israel has always been are not surprised. But there are many people who have been deluded. And Netanyahu, in the Semitic language, the true Semitic language, Satan is Shaitan. And Yamin means the right hand. So forgive me if I just refer to Benjamin Netanyahu instead of Benjamin Netanyahu.
That's fine. Yeah, go for it.
I will indeed. Now, do you have any questions? How do you want to conduct this? Do you want to ask questions or?
I want you to just lay up. I want you to explain to the American people what's going on, what's really going on, what they don't understand about the conflict. And why Israel is not the great friend and ally of the United States.
Well, no, it's the master of the United States, certainly not a friend. Israel is the Israelis, the Zionists, consider themselves the supreme, like Satan. They are the supreme power, and they have totally infiltrated with their evil all of the institutions of the United States and all the Western governments. They have found sufficient and efficient methods of convincing them to follow along. When I see what the European countries are doing, especially Germany, who has accepted responsibility for this fraudulent Holocaust, there were certainly during the Second World War camps, labor camps. That happens in any war. And did people die? Of course they did. But the concept of the Holocaust, the Germans accepted the responsibility for it. So today's generation of Germans who are shaming their parents and grandparents, they have accepted the responsibility for the Holocaust, but have shifted the cost of paying for it in terms of blood and suffering and sadistic torture. They have shifted that penalty over to the Palestinians. And what guilt did the Palestinians have? They welcomed people because there were no borders. At the time, Palestine was under the control of the Ottoman Empire. And so they were simply a vassal state, like many of the states that were within the Ottoman Empire. So they were really, there were a lot of colonies in Palestine. At the time that I was born there, in 1945, there were numerous Christian colonies, German Christian colonies, Russian Orthodox in particular. In fact, the Russian Empire used to take special care of the Orthodox Christians, which I am, not Russian Orthodox, but Greek Orthodox, not by ethnicity, but by religion. The Russian Orthodox, however, took responsibility for all the Orthodox and looked after them, ensuring that the Ottoman Empire did not abuse any of the Christian Orthodox, either in the Balkans or in any of the Ottoman territories. Then the Vatican used to take care of the Catholics. And many of the people who ended up living in Bethlehem were translators sent by the Pope. In fact, St. Jerome for many, many years lived in Bethlehem, translating the Septuagint and other religious documents. But the thing is that it was a country that either had exhausted itself after centuries of wars within the region, which is one of the faults of humanity. We're constantly warring with one another. But they basically accepted everybody because everybody who was there by choice. Most of them, because of their belief in this being the Holy Land, the origin of where monotheism took root into numerous religions and then the sects within the religion. But the unifying factor is that we were all, as my grandmother said, when I once asked her, since you're living in exile and are suffering the most, do you hate Jews for what they did in Palestine? And she said, no, we are all children of God. Do not hate them. So I followed her advice. However, I've reached a point now, she does not know what Israel was capable of. The original religious people who called themselves Yahudim were indeed religious and very accepting of one another and respectful towards one another's beliefs and faiths. So they were worthy of being considered children of God. But today's Israelis are, in my mind, the children of Satan. And Benjamin Netanyahu is their leader, their right-hand man. And Blinken, Antony Blinken, is his Siamese twin. You take off his human costume and you'll see Satan underneath. America, you're in trouble. And of course, Canada is closely aligned with the evil that dominates now in all of the U.S. Your country has been destroyed. This country where we sought exile, where we have lived in exile, as well as other countries. But we have lived in exile always under the yoke, under the pressure, under the torment of the sadistic Satanists that call themselves Zionists. Oh, excuse me. They're the Jewish people. The Jewish people of the Bible. But what were they in Europe? They were Yiddishers. Ukraine, ironically, Ukraine and Gaza, there are similarities because they're both under the control, the bloodthirsty control of the same people. So we have Vladimir Zelensky, and let us not forget Vladimir Jabotinsky, who Benjamin Netanyahu refers to with great pride, as someone that he thinks was a fascist who brought fascism to Palestine because the bloodthirsty gangs. As I was growing up, my father never said anything negative about Jews. In fact, he had friends who were Jews, especially the Arab Jews who had also fled and ended up living in different areas where we also lived. But the tragedy is that, remember, Vladimir, for some reason, that seems to be a common name amongst the secularists. Remember, Dracula was Vladimir. In fact, the man who was now given the title of King, Charles, bragged that he was descended of Vlad, and he bought his castle in Romania, or Moldavia, I believe it is, part of Romania. So he's quite proud of his being descended from Vlad. So these bloodthirsty vampires, and I consider the leadership of today's illegal, immoral country of Israel, which I really think is a collection of Zionist gangs, because that's what they are. That's why they have so much disputes between them at election time. That's why they always have to cobble together a series of small parties, because each gang, just like when they were invading Palestine, there were a bunch of terrorist gangs that the British labeled as terrorists. I can give you some of the names from that I remember from the top of my head: the Lehi, the Panmah, the Irgun, the Stern Gang. There were so many of them because each one was going to be the one that would form the official military, and they tortured and tormented the Palestinian residents. Now, the Palestinians themselves are a very heterogeneous group of people. from all over the Arabian Peninsula, as well, a lot of them from Europe, especially the Christians, because many of them, as I said, formed Christian colonies in Palestine. But over the decades and over the last century, they have formed an identity that binds them together. And that is to be the target of these Satanists that are running Israel and now running most of the Western world, as well as they have now taken root in Africa. Some African countries are denouncing Israel, and they have withdrawn their ambassadors and cut off diplomatic ties. The other portion has been bribed by Israel. That is how they work. That is how Satan has always worked. Remember when Jesus was in the desert for 40 days, the temptation, the devil offered him everything. And Jesus turned his way and said, "Be gone, Satan. Be gone, Satan." And that's what we need to say to this artificial nation, this fake nation state of Satanists. We must say, "Be gone." Follow the words of Jesus. "Be gone, Satan." I consider them a danger to this entire planet. Everyone's soul is at risk. Actually, I'm rather impressed. There's a woman from a party, I believe it's called Podemos, which ironically means we can imitate. Was Obama imitating the concept, or are they following? Yes, we can. But and Obama succeeded in serving the Satanist, as we know. But anyway, this woman today, I think her name was Ione Belada. I think that is her name. But she has spoken up against Israel. And now Israel has an argument with Madrid, because Madrid and Spain is daring to call out Israel for what it is. God forbid that you should tell the truth. Satan will forbid it. He will not allow people to see him for what he is, with his disciples all centered around Benjamin Netanyahu and his allies and Blinken, that corrupt creature. And Biden, he's just a puppet, whether he's being run by electrodes with a remote control or whether he's a clone, we don't know, because they have been tampering with the human genome that God created, the natural genome. They have been tampering with it for decades. That has always been their goal, to make the human beings that God created in his image, to take that away from us so that we become instead accepting of the image of Satan in place of the image of God. And if we allow Israel to continue to exist as it is, I'm not saying kill them or destroy them or do anything, but you must disassemble that abomination that exists among us before it completely takes us apart and recreates us in the image of Satan. And they have started by injecting us with all kinds of genetically modified things, either in our food, in the air, in our water, and in these ridiculous things they called vaccines, after they created the compulsion. And this is the problem. They have been, when a person plots, or a creature with a sentient mind begins to plot how to take over an area, they have the advantage, because they have a goal in mind, and they have the time to gather around them creatures of like intent and like moral compunction, which is nothing that is moral. They have the ability then to lay out their plans, to lay out a strategy. And through numerous international organizations, they have planted people and called themselves Jews, because they take the name of Judah. They take the first syllable of Judah, which is the tribe from which I am descended. They take that first part and then attach it to themselves, and then they plant their little foot soldiers all around the world, whether it was the Israelite Alliance, Alliance Israelite Universelle, the Universal Israel Alliance, or other organizations, again funded by the banksters, the Yiddisher, the satanic banksters. They have funded them and planted them around the world so that they could influence politicians with their vote and start political parties that where they would and create legislatures where they would abolish the right of freedom of thought and freedom of expression. Because you have no freedom of expression if your capacity to think is diminished. And they have done that by destroying the complexity of the language. Look what they've done to English, those who only speak that one language. Look what they have done to that. Now, I have enough knowledge to know that they have distorted what they call Hebrew. And it's a mongrel language. I know when people, the early Palestinians, when they were first exposed to the Yiddishers who came in speaking Yiddish, they would ridicule them for ha, ha, ha, ha, ha. That is such a common sound that they make. And we hear it a lot. When I hear them speaking what they think is biblical Hebrew, my skin crawls. They have no idea. They do not have, and they don't even bother anymore to pretend. They just claim, oh, this is the language of our forefathers from 3,000 years ago. No, it is not. The idiot politician in Canada who said that, and I'm not talking about Justin Trudeau, I'm talking about Pierre Poilievre, who is a complete idiot, who parroted the words of a so-called rabbi, again, another fraud, because rabbi was never a religious designation. Theoretically, it's supposed to be the Kohanim. However, Rebbe means teacher. They were supposed to, and they were supposed to be teaching the concept of what was good religion. Now, the Yiddishers that were spread all through Eastern Europe, you can tell, as though many of you know, in certain, I think, northern and western, not all, not each country, certain in some areas, it was only western parts of the country where they would pronounce the letter R, R, as a uvular, rather than resh. And that is what, that is the first sign that they're speaking in Yiddish, because that is what they spoke in those countries, in the ghettos where they were the people. They actually, it wasn't so much that they were forced into ghettos. They isolated themselves because they had to recruit people to be their cannon fodder that they would feed into this machine that they would call the killing industry of the Holocaust of the Nazis. But they had to have people that they were that were expendable. So they lured in many peasant Christians and brought them in, and they were called Shapotnikis or Sabotniks. I think especially in the Russian region. They lured them in, and then they shipped them around. And then after they were ejected by the Bolsheviks, actually, which were the Jews or the Yiddishers, and look how brutal they were. Just read the description of how they slaughtered the Tsar's family. That is what is awaiting you. Look how they're slaughtering the Palestinians. That is what is awaiting you if you allow Israel to pick up steam and continue with what it's doing. It has got to be reined in for the sake of humanity, for the sake of those. You don't even have to be a Christian. You don't even have to be a Muslim to believe in the true God. You have to believe in the goodness of humanity, no matter whether you are an agnostic, an atheist, whatever. There are many people who do not believe in God, but still have the normal human instinct of compassion and care for those of, that are like them. I don't say all humans are like them, because obviously Shaitan has taken over many, many people, and they've been bribed and badgered and blackmailed and perverted through sexual, the most grotesque sexual abominations that have now poisoned our society all over the world. Tragically, it's not only in America or Canada or in Europe. It is not just the Western countries. They have managed to spread their perversions around the globe. And they have degraded God's greatest creation, the one he created in his image, and left that, his wonderful creation, to be stewards of this planet that God created for us. And what have we allowed? We have allowed, and then God gave us free will. God gave us, he breathed into us the consciousness and the spirit to recognize intuitively, inherently, what was good. And instead, many weak people have succumbed to bribery, have behaved in ways that have left them open to blackmail. They have been so weak of courage that they have succumbed to being badgered and harassed and threatened with whatever they might have against them. And that's the way they operate. Now, they refer to Israel propaganda as the Hasbara. Well, yes, it's all over. It's all over. It started with they started first by attacking Islam because that was their greatest fear. First, they conquered the Vatican. The Vatican had many Jewish cardinals. I'll give you one name, just a very recent one. Lustiger, L-U-S as in September, T as in Tom, I-G-E-R. He's now dead, but he was a good friend of the Polish Pope. They were friends as youngsters, and he very much influenced the latter years when they started leaning towards, oh, we must accept the Jews. The first syllable of Judah. And by the way, in the Arabian Peninsula, there were two prominent, for a certain period of time, two prominent prophets. One of them was named Saleh, S-A-L-E-H, Saleh. And the other one was Hud, H-U-D, Hud. So Yah is the definite article, the Yahud. Those are those who followed Hud. And those who followed Saleh eventually split off. There was more than one Arabic style language, and it was all brought together. Are we now in a break?
No, continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought I heard some music, but that is how it all started. That's why they, if you read the Old Testament in the original Aramaic, they're always referred to as Yehudim. But when you look at the translation, it's the Jews. Which is, of course, a word that was only created recently, because J did not even exist until about, 400 or 500 years ago? Go back, in Latin, the Romans referred to them as Judean, and so did the Greeks, because Jah does not exist in Greek either. I mean, it was the Greeks who created the word Yesus. And then, of course, in Arabic, we also refer to him as Yesus. And the Romans, who knows what they called them, but certainly many Romans were, as you know, rewarded when they were good fighters. They were often rewarded at the end of a successful military campaign with land. So there's a lot of Romans or descendants of the original Romans. In fact, there's some words in Arabic that come from the Vulgate Latin of the time of the Romans. Things like tablet. We use the word tablet today. It comes from Tawla in Arabic. They still use it. It means table, but it also means tablet. So there are so many words that still come to us from the Latin and from the Greek, and yet they all accepted Jesus and God, but not the so-called Israelis of today who falsely claim to be the descendants of the ancient Israelites. What a farce. If we had the time, I could go over many other ways that whole narrative can be disproved. However, archaeology has already done. Archaeology that is not in the hands of Israelis who apply then their interpretation, because it doesn't just matter finding an archaeological artifact, it's how you interpret it. And there's always bias. And in this case, we're talking about propagandistic bias that favors the idea that, oh, see, this proves that Israel was here. They found something that was the house of David. Oh, that proves that there was a kingdom of David. Well, David, in Arabic, everybody is the house of the name of the patronymic, the first founder of that bloodline. In Arabic, everybody is bent the daughter of this particular house or the son of this particular house. Often they will use the first name. But your first name is still, you are the house of, a daughter of, or a son of a particular house. So it is not a proof of anything. However, they put the word out and then it's picked up by the media that they own and control. And everybody, oh, well, I saw it in the newspaper. Oh, I saw it in a book. Oh, wait, I saw it on TV. Oh, no, I saw it on the internet. All of that must be true, whatever the Israelis say. And yet the Israelis are not the Israelis. They are thugs. And as I was saying earlier, my father never referred to Jews in a derogatory manner. Whenever he referred to them, it was always the Zionist thugs. Now, the British referred to them as terrorists. And everybody knows about the King David Hotel, how that was blown up by Menachem Begin's gang. And they all became prime ministers. Yitzhak Shamir murdered the Swedish Count Folk Bernadotte from the royal family, who was the first UN mediator. What was his sin that required that he be butchered and bleeding profusely when he was on his way to present the very first proposal? First, he said he had never seen people living in such poverty, in such deplorable conditions as the Palestinian refugees. That was his first mistake, to show empathy and sympathy for the Palestinian refugees. Then, in order to make it a feasible plan, he said, all right, we must separate the people. And so he divided the land and then said Jerusalem and Bethlehem, because Bethlehem is only 6 miles away from Jerusalem. So it was basically like a suburb of Jerusalem. So he said, this will remain under international control, under the United Nations or some kind of organization that will keep it under international control. But it was still going to be in the area that he had given within the plan to the Palestinian Arabs. So, of course, they had to get rid of him. And they murdered him on his way to present his plan. And you can look it up, Israel's Forgotten Hero. There's a story, I think it's either in the Telegraph or the Independent, a British newspaper. It's still online today if you want to look for it. And then, of course, there was Lord Moyne, who was, because Britain had three colonies, one in Mesopotamia, one in India, and one in Cairo. And by the way, that is why the Muslim Brotherhood arose. I think the name of the man who started it was Sayyid Qutb, and I believe he was imprisoned by the British.
Right.
Because
well, we now have come to a break. We'll continue with you right after. Stand by. You don't want to miss.
Okay. Of course.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's my great pleasure to have Lila Palestine here with so much authentic experience. We hear so many reports about the abuse of the IDF picking up Palestinian children for sport. They used to kill them outright. Now they seek to injure and maim them so they'll become a burden on the Palestinian people with medical care that goes on indefinitely. Settlers uprooting olive orchards that have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, poisoning wells, destroying villages, slaughtering Palestinians in the belief that this is their land because they are the chosen people and God bequeathed it to them with utter impunity in relation to man's law. They don't care about international law, collective punishment, Geneva Convention, because they believe they're responding to a higher law that God designated them as the chosen people. This is the promised land, and they will have it, and no one else. And that they take to be God's will. Layla, your thoughts?
They're lying about that. When we know that, we see by their behavior, God would never choose a people to do what they are doing now to innocent, unarmed, totally unarmed children and women. Never mind the elderly and those who are disabled and cannot flee over the rubble that they have created. And then to tell them you must take the Salah Eddin Road in order to go to the south and then wait, make an ambush of that and mow them down. That's why you see so many bodies littered along the Salah Eddin Road when you see video of the poor people who are trying to get from the north to the south, thinking they might be able then to survive. What they actually plan and hope to do. And by the way, after Hamas was elected, they did not grab or seize power. They were given the choice. I should finish the first, because Hamas grew out of the Muslim Brotherhood. Let me go back to how the Muslim Brotherhood started in Egypt. The British were raping the countries, the colonies, what they called their colonies. It was their right, they thought. So they robbed India. They had a woman called Gertrude Bell from an upper-class rich family, and she didn't realize what she was doing. She created borders for an artificial country from Mesopotamia that they then named Iraq. And their collaborative leaders of certain tribes became kings. And in that, yes, I include the grandfather of today's king of Jordan. he collaborated in order to get Transjordan given to him instead of allotted to the Palestinians. But anyway, there was a Lord Moyne in Cairo who was there as a British colonial officer. But the British completely robbed all the best land. This Lord Moyne lived in a wonderful mansion. And while the people were starving, the British were robbing everything, raping the land. So in defiance, they finally realized they had to have some kind of alliance to fight against this power. And that is, I believe, the first manifestation of the Muslim Brotherhood. They were eventually, of course, tormented by the British and imprisoned. However, ironically, their clients, the Zionists, sent two teenage Zionists, European Zionists, to murder Lord Moyne, which they did. They ambushed him as he was getting out of his car in front of his mansion. However, there was an Egyptian policeman nearby who followed them, caught them. They were tried. They were given a fair trial and hanged. And then later in 1975, their bodies were taken with a UN airplane giving them escort to be buried in some holy place in so-called Israel. But that's off the track. So from the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, they're eventually the same kind of concept, because the problem is, and I as a Christian say this with shame, the Christians never fought because that was our teaching. You do not fight, you turn the other cheek. So Christians left Palestine without fighting. But the Muslims knew that they had to fight in the name of God in order to retain, because they recognized better than the Christians did that Satan had the power to deceive and that they could deceive good people. And why are the Muslim numbers so wide? Because there's no great rigmarole that you have to go through, no great initiation. In order to become a Muslim, all you have to do is acknowledge that there is only one God, Allahu Akbar. That is why they always call that, because they are defending this one God, not the evil God, Satan, who disguises himself in the form of a human body. So eventually Hamas was nurtured under the same concept. And the Muslims are widespread around the world because it is so easy to become a Muslim. All you have to do is practice prayer. Look how they pray. They subjugate themselves. Everyone ridicules them. I've heard people say, oh, look how funny they look. Their head on the floor and their bum in the air. That is because they are prostrating themselves, lowering themselves, recognizing that they are below God above. I say above, I don't mean any geographic concept, in spirit. That is why humility, that humanity must practice humility in order to not think of themselves as equivalent with God, but God's creation, and that their duty on earth is to serve God's intent, which is to be good stewards of the planet and be kind to one another. Unfortunately, Christians have gone another path. They've been influenced by not all Christians. There are many good Christians, many, many good Christians. And I consider my family to have been among those, even though we didn't make a big deal about being Christian. Humility and devotion to God is something that should be done quietly. You don't have, and the other thing is there's no business of an intercessor, a priest, a church, it's become an industry and they enrich themselves. The Vatican has got one of the richest banks, part of probably the Jewish bankster gangs, very much part of that same organization. I don't doubt it for a moment. And look at this Pope. He's a disgrace, an utter disgrace. But how did Hamas emerge? Arafat started out as a good leader, but he eventually didn't recognize his limitations. He simply did not know how to speak to Western audiences. He was a disgrace. I would cringe in shame when I would see him because he didn't recognize he was blubbering along and he was so unpleasant to look at. Let's face it, in the Western world, they admire physical attractiveness, and he did not have the necessary features. Yet he always wanted to be the one who did the public talking. So eventually he lost his recognition of his limitations, and he became a liability to the Palestinians. I believe that if he did die of plutonium poisoning, which apparently after they exhumed his body, they determined that he was assassinated with plutonium, I would not be surprised if it was one of the people around him, not necessarily the Israelis, or maybe the Israelis, but some of the people working for him. Because even though he was useless, he still was a rallying point for the Palestinians. And then after him, then we have Mahmoud Abbas. And he is so utterly useless. Clearly the man who should have had elections by now has long overlived any utility he might have had. He has been lured over. He has been bribed and enticed. As soon as Hamas was elected, it was actually Jimmy Carter, a man whose integrity I think we cannot impugn. He monitored the elections because the Western world said, oh, you've got to be democratic. You've got to elect your leadership, Palestine. And they fully expected that the Palestinians would vote for Mahmoud Abbas. But surprise, surprise, they recognized how corrupt he was. I remember hearing that that people were complaining. They would sit in cafes and complain. He's living in luxury while many of us are starving. So what did they do? They voted in Hamas. Why? Because Hamas was one of them. Hamas lived amongst them. The way Jesus was modest and lived a modest life amongst the poorest of the poor, that is how the Hamas members, the leadership initially, I don't know what they're living like today. They may have been polluted by greed. I don't know. But they initially they emerged from within the people. That's why you cannot kill or eliminate Hamas. But when Netanyahu says that he wants to kill off Hamas, he means he wants to kill off every single Palestinian. And that means me, because I support what the original Hamas movement was about, fighting for the poorest of the poor, the people who have been most deprived. And that is why you cannot kill Hamas. And Netanyahu knows that. His goal is to kill every single person who identifies as a Palestinian, who actually is a Palestinian, or who sympathizes with the Palestinians. Anyone who has expressed, look at how they attacked Guterres at the UN. What is he, the Secretary General? I can't even remember his title right now. Secretary General. Okay, he spoke up and said, we must, and immediately the Jew ambassador, the Yiddish ambassador, put on the Yiddish yellow star. Like, what a childish thing. I mean, it's so overused. Eventually, you realize when your propaganda, you need a new propaganda scheme, a new marketing scheme. That's overdone, buddies. The Holocaust no longer works. Oh, and talk about the Holocaust. I remember as a child being taught in the schools here in the Western world. Oh, the Holocaust was so horrible. They made lampshades out of the skin of victim Jews, and they made purses out of the skin of Jews after they tortured them and blah, blah, blah, blah. And I remember cringing in horror and thinking, oh, how horrible that they would do that to the poor Jews. Well, that eventually fell away. But I remember at first the figure was 6,000 Jews. And then suddenly I remember somewhere along the line it became 60,000 and then 600 and then 6 million. And they're doing it now with the victims of the so-called Hamas atrocity of October 7th, which was pre-planned. Either somebody amongst the Hamas attackers is a tool, and I know how they did it. I know what they used to do because I was in Beirut in 1971. Yeah, you can remember the Mossad guys who were there who tried to recruit me. I was in Beirut in 1971 working at the Institute for Palestine Studies. As we were collating, and I helped to type and collate the manuscript that was being presented to whoever the Human Rights Committee was at the time. And in it, they described the techniques of torture and how they would turn people to become tools of theirs. They would threaten either to kill their sisters, their mothers, after they raped and tormented them in front of their eyes. They would keep them in small cement concrete cells, standing up for days on end, unable to lie down or sleep, and they would have them covered with a sack that reeked of vomit and other bodily fluids. And eventually, what would turn them to become agents for the Mossad or for the Israelis was the torture and the threat of torturing their sisters and their mothers, because amongst Muslims, they honor their women. They honor their women. They, almost the way Christians revere the Virgin Mary, some Christians, that is how they look upon their mothers and their sisters. They will die before, it will die to protect their honor. So they often, they were turned. They became implicit. Maybe one of the Hamas guys was told, okay, on October 7th, we're going to give you 7 hours. You bring your guys over and you do the thing. We know what you've been doing. We've been watching you do it. And that's great. You've done a good job organizing everything. Keep doing it and let the Arabs think that it's their idea. What do I, the thing is, even here, in, when there's a domestic crime scene in any city, as soon as the crime is reported, police are supposed to show up and put a yellow band all the way around. It's a crime scene. Nothing is to be walked on or any of the evidence is supposed to be touched or moved. Well, let me see. Did they ever isolate the area? No, not that we've seen. They haven't shown us any video. The initial reports, 50 people were killed. Then the next day it was 100. Then it was 12 or 13 or nah, and then finally it was 1,400 people. And among them, so while these people were taking their lives into their hands on a mission that had to be done quickly and precisely, they stopped to behead women. In a world where sex with promiscuous women is readily available, all they have to do is go to Europe or come to North America and they can get all the women throwing themselves at them. They have to stop and do it in Israel while they're supposed they're going to be mowed down by Israeli soldiers. So that's the never. They finally, after they staged this, just like they staged the Holocaust, after they choreographed the whole scene and staged it, and then they brought in the reporters who work for the wire services that are on the payroll. And there was a report about wire services reporters being on the Israeli payroll that appeared in the newspapers around 1991. I saw it one day in the news section, I think on page 3. Next day, no mention of it. All gone. Never happened. They didn't report it any further. So we know that they're paying, obviously, these poorly paid, all these wire services reporters are always underpaid. Many of them are just so happy to have to be working for the services. Like newspaper writers, they like to see their name in print, the byline, or the TV news reporter who can't wait to do a stand-up and see their own face on, look, Ma, I'm on TV, I'm doing a stand-up in the news story. The vanity is why they're so underpaid, and that's why they're so easily bribed, because they are underpaid. And if they have vanity, you can be sure they've also got greed, because with money, you can feed your vanity even more. So then they bring in these reporters and say, look at what those terrible Hamas terrorists did. Look at these atrocities. Now we have to punish them. Well, the thing is, in international law, especially in the conclusion or the judgment issued by, I believe it's the International Court of Justice or one of those organizations. There's so many of them, these alphabet institutions. One of them issued a decision with regard to the illegal wall that was built in Palestine, dividing up communities from one another. Division, again, divide and rule. So when they built the wall, I believe that was taken before one of the international courts. And the ruling was that Israel has the right only to use proportional power to repulse an attack. Not you can go after an attack has occurred and then go out and slaughter any and everybody that you think might be somehow have come in contact with the so-called perpetrators that we have not yet really identified. What is wrong with you in the Western world? A primary principle of the judiciary is you find suspects, you confirm through gathering of evidence, impartially gathered evidence, you present it before a legitimate forum, whether it's a court of law or an international court of law, you present your evidence and then you deliberate on that and then you come to a conclusion and you say, yes, this is beyond any shadow of doubt, even if there is, you know, there might still be some doubt in some minds, they still deliberate. and they hope for a unanimous decision by the participants. This is the person who is guilty. And yes, we have concluded on the basis of all the evidence and our deliberation that this crime was committed by this person. Then you execute punishment. They have, Israel has distorted one of the most fundamental principles on which Western civilization is built, an honest and honorable judiciary. And keep in mind, this event of October 7th occurred when? After what, 40 days or how many months or 4 months? I don't know how long. The Israelis have been, they've been protesting Netanyahu's efforts to weaken the Supreme Court of Israel, because even though it was always biased against the Palestinians, it still meted out justice for those who were considered legitimate Jews and therefore legitimate Israeli citizens and therefore worthy of justice, unlike the Palestinian citizens of Israel. So he wanted to weaken that so he could also escape prosecution for his, which he could no longer hide the extent of his criminality. So he was being prosecuted. So wasn't that convenient? Suddenly all the protests against him stopped because now they were united. Benny Gantz from the blue and white joined his unity government. I believe Yair Lapid managed to resist. I don't think he joined, but he had those vile thugs who have been convicted, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, racist to the core, feeding and teaching and arming all those vile criminal thugs, those hooligans is a nice word. It's a mellow word. They're just sadistic little thugs who go out and start tormenting innocent people in the West Bank. Hey, Gaza was the one that was supposed to be guilty of the so-called crime of October 7th. So why are they all ganging up with the soldiers helping them to torture and kill? One man asked for water, and the sadistic settler said, "You want water?" He urinated on him. That is a very common thing. That is what we have all been watching. We in the Western world, who pride ourselves on having an honorable and ethical judiciary. And as for the judiciary, it started to be polluted when you let Jews in, as because there was, we don't know the origin of it, but apparently there is supposed to be a Jewish seat on the Supreme Court. So that went to Louis Brandeis first. And then he brought in his little, the one he was mentoring, his little secret mouth, his little gopher, Felix Frankfurter. And Felix Frankfurter was at the so-called peace conference in 1919, where they first created the League of Nations and managed to award the mandate for Palestine to England, who then, of course, was acting on behalf of them. And before England issued the Balfour Declaration, they sent it to Woodrow Wilson for approval. In 1917, Woodrow Wilson said, no, the time is not right. He rejected it. Now, somehow, 1 month later, Woodrow Wilson said, oh, okay, go ahead and issue the Balfour Declaration. In that time, and ironically, it was Jewish scholars who first uncovered it, Louis Brandeis, the man who was not supposed to be acting as in illegal political activities, he had persuaded Woodrow Wilson to approve, to tell Britain, okay, go ahead and issue the Balfour Declaration. Now, it's only a declaration. It's not a binding treaty. But what it did do, it had great moral suasive power. And that's what it did, because the British government, everybody knew, well, Britain says there has to be, well, in Canada, we belong to Britain. We're part of the Dominion. Oh, all of those people who are in the Commonwealth, Australia, New Zealand, all of those, well, they're all part of the Commonwealth. And of course, the United States, Woodrow Wilson had already been taken care of. Now, we know that for a while, Woodrow Wilson was in a coma. Was he really in a coma, or was he just incapacitated? That would be my question. What proof do we have? Roosevelt, supposedly, some doctors say he may have been suffering from brain melanoma. Now, how well was he manipulated? Winston Churchill, very corrupt man who used his daughter-in-law as a whore to reach all the British military that were in London during the Second World War to try and bring the U.S. into the war, because without the U.S., we'd all be speaking German now instead of English. German would be the language of universal business. But anyway, that's another story for another time. I would like to go back someday to the what I believe are the original, because one thing they have always done in order to elevate their stooges, they always made sure that they gave them some kind of award of significance, an honorific, such as a Nobel Prize for one thing or another. Einstein was a fraud. By the way, is anybody old enough to remember when there was a picture of Einstein with his tongue hanging out, lolling like a dog, and his hair was all frizzy and ugly? He looked like an idiot, like a complete idiot. And then now, try and find it on the internet. No, his hair is nicely coiffed, a little fuzzy still. But no, he doesn't have his tongue lolling out. You can't find that photo anymore. And where did Einstein's ideas come from? He plagiarized from his Christian wife, his Croatian wife, Maleva Maric. And when the Australian Broadcast Company did a video on that ran on PBS in the U.S., wow, did they ever get in trouble. Israel came in and just came down on those women, the two women who produced the documentary, and seized all the letters between Einstein. He called his wife Dolly. I can't remember what her nickname for him was. But he married her. But his mother constantly complained, you've got to be married to a Jewish girl. You can't marry a Christian. So after he plagiarized her work and apparently two other colleagues, there were only five students in that class in Switzerland, a highly exclusive school. She was a brilliant woman, highly, highly. And her father was wealthy and was able to get her admitted to that university, where to her great misfortune, she met Einstein, who used her. And then she became pregnant with two children, one of which was a violent man that was schizophrenic.
Okay.
And in order
Lila, we're hitting the break and we're going to take calls after 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Lila, we seem to have no callers as yet, so you're welcome to continue. I found from extensive experience often when they have a guest they find so fascinating, they just want to hear everything they have to say. Please do continue.
Okay, well, I'll continue on the theme of the brilliant Jews who are such geniuses. Yeah, you know, there's a wide range of intelligence in the Caucasoid races. So I would say that many of them, for example, like Einstein, who was a cheater, a plagiarist, there are many others like him, and they are probably gifted. Those who seem to have unusual talents, I have to wonder how much of it is actually genetic and how much of it is actually gifts from Satan, because Satan has the power. The Shaitan can do it all. But let me go back then to the Rothschilds. Right now, the hated symbol is the swastika. Someday, if this planet survives the crisis that Benjamin Netanyahu is forcing and his allies around, his disciples around him, if they succeed, we won't have to worry about a future. They will make all our decisions, assuming we're allowed to live as robots or AI. If we do manage to survive, if we stop them, if we dismantle their plans, if we do survive, someday that 6-point star will be equivalent with the hatred we now show to the swastika. But it will be even more hated because eventually the truth will be uncovered and we will recognize that the swastika, the Nazis, were actually just actors for the Zionists. They had to create the spectacle, like October 7th had to create an event to justify the mass slaughter of innocent people. Likewise, they took advantage of the labor camps where people died because of overcrowding, a shortage of food, a shortage of medication, and many of them were indeed experimented on by the talented Jewish doctors who were well-trained by the Germans and the Russians. They had excellent educational institutions, both in Russia and in Germany. And by the way, they were chased out. One of the ministers for the Tsar recognized the threat that the Yiddishers of Russia represented to the cohesion of the Tsarist empire. And his name was Count Nikolai Pavlovich Ignatieff. And he was at that time the Minister of the Interior. And when he was being confronted constantly by the Jews saying, we need more protection, we've got pogroms, people attacking us, So he did an investigation, presented his report to the Tsar, and said many of those pogroms are taking place, but a lot of it is because the peasants are starving, they have no clothes, they're barefoot, and the Jews are charging exorbitant prices, and when they lend the money, their usury is obscene. So they may be responsible in the sense that they are inciting hatred against them. So the solution that Count Ignatieff proposed was that they had to be restricted in their activities and that they have to be divided, kind of like the way they divided Palestine. Because when the Jews invaded Palestine, they created mayhem and torture and murder. And so the world, after they manipulated the UN vote, they decided to partition Palestine. Well, that goes back to the Bolsheviks and to the recommendation that was made in order to protect the peasants from the exploitation of the Yiddishers in Russia. So he's responsible for the May Law and the Pale of Settlement. So finally, when they managed to bring down the empire, the Russian Empire, and they butchered the men that were responsible for the murder of the Tsarist family, were Jews, Bolshevik Jews, and they were drunk because they didn't have the courage to face them. So they all got drunk. All they had to do in order to do an efficient slaughter was to come close, shoot them in the head. A bullet in the forehead, between the eyes, that would be kind. But instead, they stood back like cowards and they just fired their guns. And the bullets kept were bouncing back and forth. Repercussions. Why? Because the children and the women and the mother had all sewn in jewels and diamonds and whatever stones into their clothing because they knew they would need that if they managed to escape. But of course, they didn't. And then they utterly butchered. I mean, they botched how they tried to kill them. Those that survived, they had a grave. They finally found a mass grave and through DNA identified them. Of some of them, but there were two bodies missing. They found them years later, and again through DNA confirmed that these were the children of the Tsar. They tried to burn them, and you can't burn a human body. There's too much water, too much fluid in a human body. You can't just pour fuel on it and think it's going to continue to burn until it evaporates into or crumbles into dust. So they ended up burying them, and they were eventually discovered. They botched it. And then what they did, Germany welcomed them because they accepted the story. Oh, the poor Jews in Russia, they're being treated so badly, so we'll take them into Germany. What did they do in Germany? Oh, exactly what they're doing now. They took over the banking. They took over the entertainment industry. They took over all of the instruments of government. And they pretty well destroyed the economy. And then what did they do to destroy this wonderful country that was educating them? Remember, Freud, they were so deprived. They weren't allowed to work in certain professions or enter universities. But Freud was apparently a wonderful genius who they trusted him enough that they would send their daughters or sons if they needed to try this new method of treating mental illness. So how low would he have to be in order? I mean, would they allow a lowly Jew, if they were being discriminated against, to be in a room alone with their daughters and their sons who were revealing family secrets to him? Obviously, they were in the upper classes. They were in the decision-making positions. They controlled everything. Was Hitler a Zionist? Who knows? Who knows? Because I know he created something called the Ha'avara, which means in Yiddish or Hebrew, Ha being the definite article, Avara means the agreement. They had an agreement. They were becoming such a problem in Germany that Hitler agreed, you can take your money, just get out of Germany. And so they met with the Zionist leadership. in Cairo, or yeah, I believe it was in Cairo, where they set everything up and they transferred money over to the Jewish colonies in Palestine. But by then they already had a lot of the money from the Rothschilds. And the Rothschilds, we know how they got their money. They became the bankers for all the monarchs. And they always financed both sides of all wars. So the Rothschilds were extremely wealthy, having gotten their wealth through the monarchies of Europe and through the wars that they incited them to engage in on both sides and divide and conquer. They conquered the purse by getting them to fight one another. So the Rothschilds already, the first one to set up a colony in Palestine was the French branch. I believe his name was Edmund, Baron Edmund de Rothschild. So I believe he set up the first colony, and that would have been roughly around 1880. So clearly, if this was already being done in 1880, how long ago did they start planning it? How far back does it go? Is it in the Talmud? Are there other places? I've always been skeptical. I used to be skeptical about these things, the Weishaupt and all the, you know, the Illuminati and all of these. I don't know. These private clubs seem to be a real thing. I know in our modern age, the Bilderberger group does meet regularly, supposedly to decide what's good for the planet, for our welfare. And what did I find when you went? And they don't even bother to hide it from us anymore because they already have us under control with the UN army at their disposal and other, you know, mercantile military that they can hire. They already have us under their control. Look what they did in Canada to the truckers. Those weren't Canadian police. They were on horseback knocking over women, older women who were using walkers. Disabled women. That's how vicious they were. And there was video of a UN plane in the tarmac nearby. So they have us under control. Now the question is, to what extent is it too late for us to free ourselves? I don't know, Jim. I'd like to hear your feedback. Do you think it's too late, or are we done? Have they got all the instruments of power and force? There is one saying that is common amongst Israelis, apparently. Along with saying, well, it's time for us to go into Gaza and mow the lawn, meaning it's time for us to go in there and bomb them and kill them and chop them down. That was their cute little analogy. Oh, let's go in and mow the lawn. The other thing that they have is, if force doesn't work, use more force. Ha, ha, ha. Aren't they funny? I'd like to hear, Jim, from your observations and your life experience. Do you think it's too late? If not, how do we save ourselves?
Well, Israel has committed two colossal blunders that are altering its status in the eyes of the world and as a member of the community of nations. In the first place, they allowed the Hamas attack of October 7th. I have no doubt about it. That fence was probably the single most secure border in the entire world, so carefully monitored, where Netanyahu had IDF forces disperse, moved them up to the West Bank, disarmed others, allowed the festival to go forward. He wanted to create a pretext for the onslaught on Gaza, which appears to be driven not only by the desire to remove all Palestinians from Palestine, but to have all of the former lands of Palestine be under Jewish control with no exceptions, in the wake of the failure to be able to convert Ukraine into the new Israel, which I believe was always the aspiration for the Khazarians, as you astutely observe, are the... Now, today, the originators, the genetic source of the overwhelming population of Israel today, it has nothing to do with Hebrew roots. You're 100% correct. So that the Palestinians, who actually are Semitic, and yes, it is a linguistic distinction, but a very profound origin, are actually Semites, but the Israelis are not. Israel today is the greatest practitioner of anti-Semitism in the world today. Now, it created that prospect, that pseudo justification by means of the allowing the raid to go forward and taking of hostages. Israel lost the image of invincibility. This had been a psychological benefit of immense advantage to Israel to have the world believe that was impossible to attack Israel with impunity, that it would be detected immediately and dealt with forthrightly. So it shattered the illusion of invincibility. It inspired at the same time Muslim and Arab countries to be, exalting in the military prowess of Hamas. Even Scott Ritter, who's a very sophisticated commentator, has observed how it was carried out with great precision and accuracy as a military operation. The claims about the beheadings and killing children and women and rapes and all that appear to be just more Israeli propaganda, which appears to be endless. They've been very upset by some of those who have been released by Hamas, that they were dealt with kindly, gently, and in a humane fashion, because that is not the Israeli way. Now, having set up a pretext that had this adverse effect that is yet to be fully appreciated, but the consequences of which are going to be immense, that Israel is not invulnerable to attack, undertaking the wholesale slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza has set the world aghast. One nation after another has been appalled. Several have already, Yemen, for example, has already declared war. Algeria is on the verge. I think Turkey is going to prove to be a very crucial player here. But virtually every humane nation is simply appalled that Israel has lost the veneer, the cover story of victimhood derived from the mythology of the Holocaust. I discovered an interview with a former Israeli minister of education with Amy Goodman. This is from decades ago, where Amy was asking her about criticism of Israel. And she said, well, it's a trick, she said. When there's a criticism of Israel in Europe, we bring up the Holocaust. When there's criticism of Israel in the United States, we claim that it's anti-Semitic. And, of course, we see that to this day. But as you are quite accurately observing, it's lost its punch. It's been overplayed. Today, in 2023, you still get commercials on television talking about the poor survivors of the Holocaust. Well, give me a break. I mean, it's just absurd. Lila, it's just absurd. And what I'm saying is Israel overplayed its hand. Israel is going down one way or another, and all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put Israel together again. And the United States, I'm sorry to say, is going down with it. We're bringing in all these aircraft carriers. I take it there's even a nuclear sub. Well, Turkey has dispatched 100 warships. Erdogan, as we heard from Colonel McGregor earlier, is nobody's fool, and he has already declared that Turkey's troops will be fighting in Gaza. And I say this is going to come to pass. China has expressed its support for Gaza. Putin has now declared his support for Gaza, for the Palestinians, and Russia is absolutely crucial here. The relation between him and Netanyahu, which were rather cordial up to a certain point when all this broke out, have now frozen. No communication between them and Israel has even declared Turkey and Russia to be part of an axis of evil. Well, they've overplayed that concept as well, Lila. They've overplayed it. In my opinion, Israel is going down big, big, big, will not survive.
I hope not. I hope they do fall apart, crumble apart. Where they go, I don't know. And we have to keep track of them, because evil like that has a tendency to be like a parasite that spreads, worse than a virus. The axis of evil, that was written by David Frum, whose mother was a terrible hostess on Canada bragged, the Jews in Canada utterly bragged. I remember seeing interviews with the one who was running the National Film Board very smug Jew. He looked exactly like what I'd imagine, Vlad Dracula would have looked like. But he was smugly bragging how they controlled the National Film Board of Canada, which was once highly respected. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Canada, controlled again by Jews until now. Now, unfortunately, now that it doesn't really matter, they're beginning to show some compassion for Palestinians. And so all of these so-called alternate media, which is really Zionist propagandists, because they're taken to Israel on junkets. They've become junket junkies. They go every time Israel says, come on, a free trip to our Disneyland, our biblical theme park. Come on over. We're the holy people. And so they bribe them, show them around, treat them, and give them all the goodies. So the alternate media now wants to see the CBC defunded. Well, that's because they're no longer controlled by the Jews, because the CBC has to worry about ratings, even though they get 1.2 or 1.5 billion per annum. And that has been since the inception of the CBC, I believe about 90 years ago. They've been getting a huge grant from Parliament in order to counteract the American media's influence, in order to retain a Canadian identity, which of course failed. You can't defeat ideas. If Canadians like American ideas, they're going to practice American ideas. And that's why I say to this idiot, well, I don't think even he believes it. He knows that you can't kill an idea. You've got to kill the people who believe in the idea, or you alter their DNA. And they will find ways to do that. Satan has wonderful powers, unfortunately. And we have allowed ourselves to be seduced by this search for endorphins, whether it's through drugs, promiscuous sex, abominations of the instruments through which humans procreate, everything. Drug addiction, it's cheating, stupidity, laziness, everything. It's tragic what these countries were, what the Western world was not that long ago. Think of the beautiful music that was created. I think of Handel's Messiah. It was so beautiful. I think of all the amazing music from Beethoven, from Bach, from, oh God, the classical music. Instead, we're treated to what I consider to be rather ugly noise. I hate when I'm on hold and I have to listen to what they consider music, and I consider noise pollution. Can't cut it off. Yeah, we've lost a lot of the beauty, the literature, even the British. I have utter contempt for the English, I have to say, as they played. And again, the Scots played along, but the Scots betrayed their own people. When England wanted to take over Scotland and they could not succeed, what they did was they bribed the upper class Scottish landowners and said, if you throw off your tenants, if you get rid of your clans, we'll make you lords and members of aristocracy in England. So they did. That was called the Highland Clearances. They threw all their tenants off the lands, and the Scots were sent off in ships to find new places to live. And so they became, the Scots became part of it. The Welsh, Wales always resisted. In fact, William Wallace, that's what Wallace means. He was from Wales. He was a Welshman. So William Wallace fought bitterly against the British, but he was killed in the most horrendous, you know what it was like when they used to draw and quarter them. The British would hang them until just before they were about to die, they cut them down and then do the butterfly with their lungs, slice open their chest, spread their lungs out on the open as a butterfly. And then they would pull out their intestines and then remove their genital or their genitalia while they were still alive. And you had to be very good at this kind of hang, because you had to know how long you could leave them hanging so that they would be alive to watch this. And the British used to, the English used to come around and watch. This was entertainment. I mean, we all laugh about the audiences that would come and attend the guillotine and cheer as the aristocracy was being beheaded, and how some of them would sit there. They were portrayed as knitting needles. I don't know how true that was, but that's how bloodthirsty supposedly the French were during their revolution. But Britain, we know for a fact, that is what they used to do. That was drawing and quartering. Oh, quartering. What they used to do was tie each limb to a horse and draw and make the horse go in opposite directions, ripping the person's in, the person into quarters. Now, the tragedy is under the rubble in Gaza, what we have is the limbs of children, women, men, all of those innocent civilians who ran around almost like, God, I hate to say this, but like insects or cockroaches when you're spraying an extermination poison to kill them, a toxic poison, they scatter around like crazy. Oh, how these Zionist Satanists must have laughed to watch them scrambling every time they dropped a bomb on them. And the
I am sure I speak for a vast majority of the audience, though not all, in profound appreciation for sharing your experience, your knowledge, your insights about what's taking place here. To a certainty, Netanyahu and his clique are done for. Even Haaretz had an editorial describing him as an existential threat to the existence of Israel. There have been massive crowds out there protesting in front of his home, but he is an evil man. I agree 100% with your description, but he's also very clever. And in my judgment, he is, in effect, the commander-in-chief of the American military today, which reflects the enormity of the problem we confront. We're at the very end, my dear. Please give me one final thought.
Simply getting rid of Netanyahu was not enough, just like getting rid of Hamas fighters is not enough. There are too many people who are infected with this satanic disease. Israel has got to be dismantled, and then those who were the leadership of Israel have got to be watched very carefully. Many of them should be in prisons for the rest of their natural lives and then leave it in the hands of God to punish them.
It's been absolutely sensational having you here. I conclude by once again encouraging everyone to spend as much time with their family, friends, and people they love and care about. We literally do not know how much time we have left.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Wonderful.
Bye-bye.
Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Treason to hold the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their